Honestly, this was one of those sermons that some of my colleagues who was going to preach on the same passage decided to opt out because of the difficulty that is happening in the Middle East. Because it deals with the political, the power of who controls that particular land. David became the king of Israel. He actually kind of became the king of all of Israel. He was the king of the south, and then he unified the north. And all that history deals with conflict with the Philistines and other folks who were already in that space as they entered into it. So, like I said earlier in the service, there's a lot of innocents that are suffering, and that has happened for thousands of years before Christ. So as much as we just heard in the gospel that Jesus is from that house of David, it's a hard history with very few white hats in that, but also a lot of God at work inside of it. So I came around to kind of bring a little bit of that as best as I could. Now, David is anointed the king of Israel. He actually follows the first king. We're in the book of Samuel. Samuel was the one who anointed the first king and then David. He really didn't want to do it at all. In fact, God, heard the people of Israel going, "We're a mess. We need a king. We need somebody to organize us and lead us, and we can't seem to do it ourselves." And God said, "You could follow me." He says that to Samuel, like, they won't follow me, and they're not really following you very well. So they need a king. Just let them do it. Have you ever said that as a parent or a boss? Just let them do it. Warn them. Tell them what they need to know that, okay, well, this is what's going to happen, and that's what's going to happen. But, and so they say, "Oh, please, let us have a king. Please, please, please." And he gave him Saul. Saul did not work out so well. And so a very long, beautiful, complicated story. We move from Saul to David. So David is the new king. He has, looked around at some of the things that are going on. He's understood to be a person of faith, but he is also kind of seeing, reading the land. And one of the things that he makes a priority, first 100-day kind of things. Of course, it's not 100 days, but, one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. I don't know if it ever made it into Jerusalem in the first place, but certainly that is really home, right? Because that's the place where the people of Israel lived and occupied. It would be coming back to the people of Israel. Now, who here knows the Ark of the Covenant story? Okay, some of you do. That's great. You get extra points too. Readers and Ark of the Covenant people get extra points. Let me try just to be really brief. When a few weeks ago, we talked about Moses. You remember him? Moses. And Moses was, the Lord spoke from the burning bush and said, "Go get my people out of Egypt." And he went and did it. He didn't want to, but he went and did it anyway. And he led them into the wilderness. Actually led them back to the mountain where the burning bush was, because God said, "I want you to come back here and worship me." And when he got there, he went up to the mountain and said, "Here we are." And the Lord said, "Good. Here's what I expect." That is the Ten Commandments. They are written down on tablets, and Moses brings them down. They're doing the wrong thing. It's a big, fat mess. Moses breaks those Ten Commandments and goes back up. The Lord's so mad, he says, maybe I should do like I did with Noah. Do you know the story? Part of the story? It's horrible. Maybe I should do what I did with Noah and start over. Reboot. Just like when Windows won't work, you pull the power cord and you restart the thing, right? Control, Alt, Delete. Nah. Pull the power cord. And so here is here's Moses. No, please, Lord, don't do that. And so he gives it to him again. And then he comes back down and he has instructions about, I want you to build this sacred place. And we're going to take these Ten Commandments and we're going to take some of the manna that you have and some of the other objects, and we're going to take them with us. And the Lord is going to be with us. And there was this cloud of smoke and fire that would come down over that. And they followed. And they followed. And they followed for 40 years. Okay? Moses comes to the end of his life. They move into the promised land, but there are still those objects understood to be the manifestation of the presence of God, just kind of like that pillar of fire was. Now, in that, those objects were contained in a box called the Ark of the Covenant. This is the Indiana Jones portion of today's sermon. Okay? Anybody see the Indiana Jones movie I'm talking about? Ah, lots of hands on that one. Everybody gets points, all right? So there is a box. It is created with specific instructions. It has winged creatures on the top of it. It's gold, and it carries those objects, the Ten Commandments, the manna, Moses' staff. It carries those things that reminds the people of God's presence with them. And then they are supposed to kind of like have it with them. But bad things happen. At one point, it's captured by the Philistines. And they hold it for a while. And, you know, the Philistines have some really bad things happen to them. They say, we need to get this back into the hands of the Israelites. And so they send it back. And then the Israelites have it. And they keep it hidden. It's like, we have God. We don't have God, but we have an understanding of the presence of God, but we're not going to show anybody, and we're not going to talk about it because, can you hear me? Because we don't want to. There's lots of versions of we don't want to, but there you are. So David's king, and he's like, I need to get that thing back home. So they have it hidden in a place, and so David takes a lot of troops with him, and he goes, and he knows where the box is. He gets the box. He actually starts bringing the box back, and in the process of bringing this this chest, this Ark of the Covenant, he starts to, you know, kind of celebrate, right? And the people are celebrating. All those troops, all those folks, he must have brought musicians with him, because they start, you know, bringing out the lyre and the lute and the tuba, the xylophone, you know, whatever it is, the banjos are playing. And so there is this rejoicing that goes on. Now, that parade that they create doesn't go well at first, and we didn't hear that part read, but they have to stop for a while, hide the thing again, and then they start making their way back to Jerusalem, okay? And so they start the parade again. There's celebrating going on. There's rejoicing going on. This is something that was in a way lost to our consciousness and our memory, and it is being brought back, right? Like coming back from COVID, right? You know that feeling, like, oh, I forgot how good this was. So they're in the process of moving into Jerusalem, and David is dancing. In fact, the whole troop is probably dancing along with him. He's probably not the only one dancing, but he's in front. He's in front. He's, you know, there's some parts of the story that say he was naked, okay? Now, if I didn't get your attention before now, I just did. Others say he was in kind of like a tunic that was pretty revealing, if you know what I mean? So, yeah, like a hospital gown, you know? Not a hospital gown. Please don't write me letters. But it's revealing. But there he is, and he is dancing. Just think about that for a second. David is dancing. Do y'all like to dance? Any dancers in here? Let's see a bold raising of hands about dancers. Okay, there's a good number of dancers in here. Now, how many of y'all are good? Some of you are really good. Now, you know, dancing is so weird. When I grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, when dinosaurs roamed the earth, when I grew up in that age, actually, that's not very funny because some of you grew up before that. I would like to withdraw that joke and try something different. Now, I've seen, you know, my mom and dad have told me about going to see Chubby Checker. Yeah, oh yeah. And a few other artists in a town near theirs. And the image of them at a concert is bizarre, but the image of them dancing, because they said, oh yeah, we were, and there's the, you know, the twist, and this is as good as it gets with me, by the way. I mean, seriously, that's as far as I go. But there's organized dancing. You know what? When I was growing up in the 70s, there, it was kind of like free form. You know, when I would go to high school dances, it was kind of like, you know, kind of, this was it. You know, this is good right here. You know, there was talk about Saturday Night Fever, you know, with all that which happened. But none of us could do that, you know, so we're all just kind of free-forming our way through that. How many of you are at least comfortable with the free-form, you know? A lot of you are. This is nice. I'm not going to ask you to stand up and do it with me, but, you know. Can you play Dancing Queen? Can you just kind of throw that up? No. Okay. But then I reached a place in my life when I started to go to wedding, and you know, there's weddings, and then there's the wedding reception. And I kind of like going to weddings, and I don't mind going to wedding receptions. That was kind of one of the perks of being a preacher. And Gina and I went through a phase where all of our peers, you know, a lot of them were getting married, and we went through all these things, and someone invented the Macarena. Who I believe is the devil. Because I tried to do that. I did. I stood up with my wife and I tried to watch the people around me. Oh, sure, Bert, you can do this. Just do what we're doing. And I couldn't do it. Now there's like the Cupid Shuffle and the Harlem Shake and, and those are old, you know. A few of you kind of know the Running Man and the Lawnmower and all those kind of, you know. But it's embarrassing, isn't it? There's going to be dancing. Now, what happens with us is that we stop dancing after a while because we don't want to have anybody see what the preacher just did on Sunday morning. Ooh. Don't let the grandkids see that. Don't let the children see that. Don't let my coworkers see that. Don't let, oh, the guys at the lodge, oh, the scouts see this. Oh. No, don't do it. We get kind of closed down and embarrassed, and I don't want to dance anymore. Or if I do, I'm going to dance only among those who I'm really comfortable with and who know me well enough to forgive me for what they're about to see. Okay? David didn't do that. David is in front of the ark, and he is throwing it in there. All right? He looks like one of those inflatable men in front of the car dealership. By the way, there will be that video shown later on, I'm sure. So if you didn't see it then, don't worry. I'm sure it'll show up again. But David's into it, right? He's actually thrown himself into that, so much so that it gets written down. It is outside of what is expected for a king to do or a noble person to do. It is outside of what is proper and couth. You do not see the President of the United States dancing very often, do you? But everybody can remember the videos. No, right. It's just not done. And there he is, nonetheless. Now, as he's coming to town, one of his wives, he had many wives, one of his wives, the daughter of his predecessor, who just had a really awful relationship with him, she sees him dancing, coming into town, dancing like that, and later she pulls him aside and said, "What were you thinking? This is beneath you. This is beneath the office that you hold. You should be ashamed of yourself." But he did it. In fact, he did it with joy. He did it understanding that what he was doing actually was the celebration of how the people's hearts were being brought back alive, having had that connection, that renewed connection with God. He danced in joy and in service, kind of as a way to say, you need to be dancing too. Dance with me. Come on. Come on. Let's do this. Let's dance together. Move to the rhythm of what God is doing or singing or leading. Move to the rhythm of what is doable and possible, even in our own state, without self-consciousness or shame, without doubt, or even the burdens and the sin. I mean, David was not a great guy. Not necessarily the one that should be dancing out of joy with God, but despite that, there he is. He sings, he writes psalms, he dances in relationship with the one who loves him. He danced without attachment to the results. He's not shooting for a guest spot on Dancing on the Stars, Dancing with the Stars. Dancing on the Stars is a completely different show. One that might be interesting to see. How are we dancing? I just moved from literal to metaphorical. But how are we turning ourselves over to that joy? Opening ourselves up actually to embody that service? How are we to answer? The good news is we could still dance. Everybody can move their knees in this room. Most of you. Our elbows. Our other parts of your body. You can still dance. Your dancing machine has not turned off. You might think it has, but seriously. So later on next week, we're going to have a dad's contest in Galilee. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But the idea, though, is we still have things to do. In fact, I think Jesus says, I'm the Lord of the dance. Right? So I just wanted to kind of give you some homework, which goes like this. There used to be a country song and a bunch of t-shirts that said, dance like no one is watching. Have you seen that? I wish I had one of those shirts. There was a real popular song that went kind of with it. Dance like no one is watching what you're doing, right? But the reality is that there are people watching. Do it anyway. In fact, people need to see that, like they needed to see David. Maybe we should dance like we're dancing with God. Wouldn't that be something? As if God were with us and dancing alongside of us, because we, in our joy and in our service, would be doing that very thing. So as you leave this place today, may you boogaloo out of here. Foxtrot. Some people like the foxtrot. I don't know why I looked at you when I said foxtrot. Flogging or stamping or ever how you dance and ever how you know how to do it. Go and dance. And I ask you this in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.